Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams, here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, covering down on all the issues. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to Monday. Welcome to a meatloaf Monday. It's a manic meatloaf right before the election Monday. Hit me some meatloaf, man.
I think I'll try the meatloaf sandwich.
Do you know what that is?
Yes, meatloaf.
What is it? I'm only asking in case I have to describe it later to a doctor.
Look, it's nutritious. Good. It's delicious.
Made out of meat. Add ketchup if you want. I couldn't care less.
Meatloaf Monday. All right, welcome to it. We got a little something to talk about, just like maybe a little something, a little something on the calendar. But right now, JP's pushing buttons on the board. Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing good, and I could use some meatloaf on this Monday.
Meatloaf Monday.
Some of my mom's meatloaf is the best meatloaf.
Oh, come on, Mom, send some meatloaf. Absolutely. We got plenty to talk about today, would you say? I mean, just
a little bit. Just like apparently there's an election tomorrow.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
There's a rumor.
Yeah.
It's unfounded, but there's a rumor. We will corroborate said rumor today. But yeah, there's an election tomorrow. There absolutely is. And that's what we're going to talk a lot about today. Coming up at 3 o'clock today, you're going to be very interested in this. I think I'm the only show in the state that's got something like this on. But we got a guy named Matt Briette. And Matt and I met some years ago when I was at the Alabama Policy Institute, and he was with the Commonwealth Foundation from Pennsylvania. Matt has been embedded in state politics in Pennsylvania now for years. In fact, he's been cited as one of the most influential members of Pennsylvania state politics over the course of time that he served with Commonwealth and now in some other capacities. We're going to talk with Matt Briette at 3 o'clock about what he feels like he's seeing on the ground right now in terms of voter enthusiasm and which way he thinks things are going to go. So, yeah, that's at 3 o'clock. Matt Briette from Pennsylvania calling in. And then we got a triple dipper just filled up with stuff. So hit it, man.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. So first out the gate, electoral battlegrounds. Yes, electoral battlegrounds. I mean, it's often that we find the battleground states make the difference in the election. I get it. I don't know that I've ever seen such a combination of potential here, potential there. What if on this state? I don't know on that state because they're all too close to call. The electoral battlegrounds is number one on the Triple Dipper, to include, by the way, a conversation about the Electoral College itself, how it is, why it is, what it is. Coming up, number one, electoral battlegrounds. Number two, the last dance. What are the campaigns saying? What are they doing? Well, you would love to believe it's all about policy and last minute, you know, gripping and grinning. There's some of that. There's also a whole lot of money being spent. There's also a whole lot of just garbage, you know, in the mix. So we'll talk about that as number two on the Triple Dipper, the last dance. And then number three, I call this one democracy is messy. What are people thinking is going to happen when the election's over, one way or the other? What do they think is going to happen? Well, there's a number of people making claims, making assertions, even making threats. We'll talk about it. Number three on the Triple Dipper is democracy is messy. All right, let me jump into the opening monologue for the day, the Right Side Way monologue. And look, a crazy story just broke in the last few days about a squirrel. You heard me. It's a crazy story about a squirrel. Look, I'm going to tell you a story about squirrels and men. Of squirrels and men, his name, the squirrel, was Peanut. And he was an internet sensation. You notice I'm speaking in past tense? A guy named Mark Longo lives in New York State. Longo adopted Peanut the squirrel when he found him orphaned as a baby and raised him as a pet for the past 7 years. 7 years. Keep that part in mind. Peanut the squirrel was trained, he was happy, and he was living in Mark's house. They had a constant presence on social media, hundreds of thousands of followers. And then the state of New York decided Peanut had to go. On an anonymous tip, law enforcement officials from the State Department of Conservation got a judge to actually sign a warrant. And they raided Longo's house and detained he and his wife. They seized their pet squirrel and a pet raccoon named Fred, and they euthanized him. Let that sink in. You got illegal immigrants, you got drag queen story hours, street crimes, urban decay, but the state of New York, run by Democrats, was able to convince a judge that a happy squirrel was a threat to law and order, so they seized him and they killed him. And the outrage has literally gone viral. Like, viral. So Peanut was the best thing that ever happened to us, Longo told TMZ in an interview over the weekend. He said, it not only tears my family apart, but Peanut was the cornerstone of our nonprofit animal rescue, he said. He said, and then 10 to 12 DEC officers raided my house as if I was a drug dealer. I sat outside my house for 5 hours. I had to get a police escort to go to my bathroom. I wasn't even allowed to feed my rescue horses. I sat there like a criminal after they interrogated my wife to check her immigration status. There's so much in there. 5 hours. 5 hours. What were they looking for? It was a squirrel. And then on top of that, they're questioning his wife about her immigration status. They don't care about immigration status. And then on top of that, they sent 10 to 12 officers to raid his house about a squirrel. Well, the Department of Conservation was asked what sparked the raid on Longo's house. And they merely replied that anonymous reports had indicated that wildlife was potentially at risk and being kept illegally. Well, it was a rescue farm. It's where they cared for abandoned and mistreated animals. And they had a website, and they had a huge social media following that clearly showed animals were loving life with people that loved them back. In fact, the business was even named after their squirrel, Peanuts Freedom Farm. And over time, they have rescued over 350 animals and nursed them all back to health. Longo said that he's very concerned now about the future viability of the rescue farm because Peanut's social media followers were a big part of the revenue they relied upon to run the facility. Mark Longo, in a separate interview he did with the AP, said, honestly, it still feels kind of surreal that the state that I live in actually targeted me and took out two of the most beloved animals on this planet. Didn't even quarantine them. They just took them away from my house and killed them. It's unbelievable. Well, Peanut the Squirrel has become the rallying cry for people who believe that government is run amok. For people who believe that government does what government does and we're just supposed to sit there and be quiet. Well, how about no? How about good folks need to stand up, push back, because the story of Peanut the Squirrel is really about two things. It's about the human interest story about a guy who had his beloved pet taken from him. But it's also about a big government run by big government bureaucrats whose priorities are no longer about serving the people who pay taxes to support the government. Thomas Jefferson once said, "The natural progress of things is for liberty to yield and to government to gain ground." Meaning that as government gets bigger, the citizens get smaller. Liberties begin to take second place to government's desire to prove its own self-worth and reasons for existence. There's a famous quote that was attributed to multiple speakers over time, including Ronald Reagan, that says, "A government big enough to give you everything you want is a government big enough to take away everything you have." Well said. And now we know this can be applied to your pets. No matter how much you love them, care for them, and rely on them, if big government has a concern, then big government believes it has a right to your pets. Look, I've said before, I am not one of those who believes that all government is bad. I know that government has a purpose, but when government gets so big that it becomes more of an impediment to progress, more of an impediment to quality of life, then you have to ask whether big government means little citizens. When we find ourselves fully dependent on government, then there's little incentive, there's little drive, there's little fulfillment, there's only expectation and a sense that we're entitled. And with entitlement, all we do is demand. We no longer create. We are required then to exist off the revenues that are collected by government. And guess where they get those from? Right. Well, for those who still try to produce in that environment, to thrive, to create, the government must have more from you, while also creating more regulations to tell you how, when, and where you will provide for the government so the government can then give those to the entitled individuals who have chosen the government as their first resort. It's a self-licking ice cream cone, my friends. One of my favorite authors is Oswald Sanders. In a work that was actually designed to teach about Christian leadership, but it applies in any category, Sanders once said this. He said, "The spirit of the welfare state does not produce leaders. If a person is not willing to rise early and work late, to expend greater effort in diligent study and faithful work, that person will not change a generation." He says, "Fatigue is the price of leadership. Mediocrity is the result of never getting tired." Let that soak in, my friends. Fatigue is the price of leadership. Mediocrity is the result of never getting tired. Look, I don't want the U.S. to be a mediocre country. I don't want Alabama to be a mediocre state. We should never desire to be a nation of low-level producers who reach out to government for the next stimulus check, the next handout, the next excuse why I don't have to work. A nation where productivity is stymied by so many regulations that folks just give up trying. Where taxation becomes so onerous that people choose not to produce just to avoid government reaching in their wallets again. A nation where anonymous miscreants can call the state and claim that your beloved pet is somehow a threat to the well-ordered society and then come and seize it and even kill it. If we get to the point that people cannot exist without government, it will only be because we have forgotten that government actually cannot survive without the people. Then we are just like that proverbial self-licking ice cream cone I just mentioned, just existing for the never-ending loop of mediocrity, living off what the government gives us while in turn feeding an ever-growing government. So yeah, I'm a conservative for a number of reasons, one of which is limited government. I don't balk at government existing. I don't rail against the machine and believe that all elected officials are corrupt, because I know they're not. But I do believe that too much government is never best. For us to win as a nation, we must have the will of the people, not the will of the government. Government should exist solely to ensure that liberty survives, to free up the private citizen to go build the better mousetrap, to set the parameters for national growth, to make options available, not mandates. Liberal progressives, they believe that the American spirit's a myth, that government knows best, that you exist for the benefit of government, not the other way around. Liberal progressives believe that government should always be the first resort when you face a personal hardship, not your family, your church, your community, and certainly not your own self-determination. It's only the government that can rescue you. Well, listen, for the past few years, under the Biden-Harris administration, we have lived under more government regulation and interaction with our personal lives than perhaps ever in the history of our nation. And recent developments indicate that big government advocates have no intention of slowing their roll. But like so many of you listening right now, yes, I am a conservative. I believe in limited government. A government that is responsive, to be sure, but one that is also not in the way. I'm a conservative, so I believe in a limited government that allows freedom of movement, one that sets the stage for success and then steps back and applauds when the private sector just knocks another one right out of the park. I'm a conservative, and I believe in the satisfaction that comes from enduring, from creating, from achieving, from trying, from failing, from trying again, and succeeding through effort, real effort, not big government entitlements or stifling regulations. I also believe that nobody should ever be allowed again to make an anonymous call about someone's pet and see big government reach in their house and raid the house and take their pet and just put it down. It's a mess. Limited government. Just one reason I choose to be a conservative. And I say go vote. Go vote for what brings us a more limited government. Do it for Peanut the Squirrel. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way. Yeah, Peanut the Squirrel, what a crazy story, man. I mean, listen, if you haven't seen it, go look at it online. And by the way, look at some of his videos. Don't tell me that squirrel was a threat. That squirrel was happy. That squirrel was living large, his best life. 7 years without a problem. Huge following on social media. Took a dozen DEC operatives to come in, detain the family, kill the pet. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, wow. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Text lines are open, 833-687-4448. Have you got your plans to vote? Do you know where you're voting? Do you know where your voting ballot site is? I mean, listen, don't not vote. Get out there. Earn your right to, you know, complain and or celebrate. Do not abdicate your rights that have been fought for you. So that's tomorrow. We're going to do it. I got everything laid on for me to go. I'm going like early. Poll's going to open. I'm going to be in line already. But Steve from Huntsville just checks it in, and this is a thing. Steve from Huntsville says, a friend of mine here at work is hosting a Ukrainian family. They came in the right way, he says. They just received through Alabama Medicaid a prefilled voter registration form for them to turn in with their other Medicaid forms. Yep. The form has written at the very top of it in fine print that only American citizens are allowed to vote, but the form has all of their personal data already prefilled and ready to submit. That's nuts. So first of all, Steve, I'm aware that's been happening. it's interesting for me to hear a firsthand account, really secondhand, I guess. But so our Secretary of State is the one who discovered that was happening. Secretary of State Wes Allen is the one who discovered on the national scene that this was part of the Biden administration's whole of government approach to register voters. Well, it does not discriminate as to who it gives it to. And it allows for any number of people to submit forms that probably shouldn't have been submitted. And then if somebody like your Ukrainian friends submit theirs, let's like, you know, I don't know, they sent it to me, it's already pre-filled, so I just signed it and sent it back in. Can they be charged? I mean, at that point, you've almost like entrapped somebody, right? Anyway, thanks for letting the heads up, Steve, and we're going to keep our eyes open. More of this to come. Ed P. from Huntsville says, Phil, tell all the Democrat voters out there to go ahead and vote for President Trump. No one's ever going to know. Listen, all I'm doing right now is telling people go vote. Vote Trump, absolutely. Trump Vance all the way. But I will not try to tell you not to vote or tell you the wrong times or something crazy. Just not going to do it. David from Huntsville says, it's unbelievable the election is this close. Each election seems to move us closer towards socialism or Marxism. Said, I fear one day in my lifetime this great experiment in freedom will be abandoned. The majority will look to the government to take care of them from cradle to grave. Yep, not on my watch, though, David, and yours either, I know. Allie from Athens says, rest in peace, Peanut, and may your rescuers find comfort in the fact that your death served as a cautionary tale for humans left behind. Great, great text, Allie. Bruce from Springville says, our government is becoming a rabid dog. Our Constitution has to be the muzzle to keep it under control. Ooh, I like that. I like that a lot. JT Lacey Springs says, the monologue is a prime example why Tuesday is take out the garbage day, not recycle it. JT's always got some quotes, man. Always got some quotes. You know who I haven't heard from in a long time? It's before your time here, but Peg Leg Dave. Peg Leg used to always, I think he was from Gurley. We need to find out where Peg Leg is.
Check up on Peg Leg.
Yeah, check the text message if you can find Peg Leg. Well, I'll tell you what, don't do it right now. Because you can do it without me losing my text. John from Huntsville, your texts are working. This is wonderful. This is wonderful. He says, Phil, spectacular monologue. He said, I love squirrels. I feed them every day. So I hope I don't get arrested for that. Also, just wanted to say that I told JP there'd be a lot of college football upsets, and there was. I just wish I would have done better at picking the right ones. And a certain Alabama football coach that I can't stand told me to pick Arkansas, and I actually trusted him. I won't make that mistake again.
You know, I trusted him, too. I had Ole Miss until I watched him pick Arkansas, and I changed my pick. And then Arkansas lost.
Nice. All right, y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I'm talking about this one. I mean, this one right here, Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi. All thrown in just for good measure. A few more text messages, and I'll dive into the material. So Kareem has checked in. Hey, Kareem's out there. Kareem says, only beta males allow others to control their wives. What is he saying?
Above, he said that he agreed that the government should not be in our personal life, but the government should have power to come into my home and tell my wife what she must do with her private parts. So why would you give the government power over your wife and private parts? And where does that leave you as the man of your house? So I assume he's talking about abortion, maybe. But
that's the most convoluted text. Okay, Kareem, I'm not even sure how to answer you right now. No one's telling your wife what to do with her private parts. If there is a baby in the womb, then perhaps you might want to consider that it's not her private parts.
It's another human being.
It's another human being, which Alabama law says it is. In fact, we even have a law in the books that dates back to when Democrats were actually in charge of the legislature that says murder of a pregnant woman is a double homicide. So it's a baby in the womb. I'm guessing that's what you say, because I'll be honest with you, ain't none of us cares about your wife's private parts. Just saying. And then the beta male thing, have you seen who's campaigning for Kamala? Just saying. We got Hulk Hogan. We got Kid Rock. We got Captain Marvel. We got all of it. I mean, I'm just saying. Shazam's out there doing stuff for anyway, whatever. Shorty from Anderson, Alabama says, hey, Phil, do you hear that Trump was holding a rally early this morning and people were lined up waiting for Trump to show up at 3 o'clock in the morning? You don't hear that kind of thing about Kamala Harris. No, in fact, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the illustrious AOC, just had a post this morning. She couldn't help herself. She had a giant Puerto Rican rally, biggest rally ever, hundreds of thousands of people, except that it wasn't even a campaign rally. It was like some major concert kind of thing and whatever. They can't help themselves. Cameron from Decatur says, remember, the government's not able to transform society. Only the church can do that. Great point. Great point. Great point. By the power of the Holy Spirit. Great point. Todd from Decatur, Alabama says, great monologue. I think he said probability. As plain as it can be, we have too many people riding in the wagon and not enough people pulling the wagon. It's just that simple. That puts it down where the baby goats can get to it. Thank you, Todd. Navy Phil from Athens says, Phil, Jimmy Kimmel said Trump's voters were to vote on Wednesday. So will he be prosecuted like the gentleman who said a meme telling Clinton voters to vote on the wrong day? Well, he should, because, yeah, remember the meme guy? He went to jail for that. He went to jail for that, and it was ridiculous. But, no, he won't, because, you know, it's good to be a Democrat. Last two. Steve from Huntsville again says, thanks for airing that. Long live the memory of Peanut. Absolutely, sir. Thank you for sharing it. That was about the Ukrainian family. And then Scott from Somerville says, beta males name their kids Kareem and then raise them to be beta males. Oh, no. I just realized what I was reading right as it came out of my mouth. Okay. All right. There we go. Let's move on. All right. So let's talk about things. Where are we right now? Electoral battlegrounds. What does it mean? By the way, credit to Dale Jackson. Oh, geez. Did I say that?
You did.
I just said that. You know, God.
There's a dump button still.
There is. We have an 8-second delay. Hit the button. Dale posted something this morning that I just had JP go grab. And it just tells us what states expect to get their results in by when. All right, so most states are going to get their results in tonight, including Alabama. Why? Because we believe in clean, tight elections. But right now, we're thinking that somewhere between 7 and 10 o'clock on Tuesday night, we should get most of the results in from Georgia and North Carolina, but if those races are close, they won't call them. Okay. We should get partial results from Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. We should get nearly complete results from Virginia, Florida, Ohio, and Colorado. That's before 10 o'clock. Ta-da! By 10 p.m. to midnight, we should have most of Georgia, North Carolina, and potentially Michigan. Again, if they're too close, they won't be able to call them yet, with still partial results from Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, and initial results from Nevada, because, you know, I think they're mountain time. Wednesday, that's the next day, somewhere between midnight, 6 a.m., though, most of the results will be in from Wisconsin and Michigan, partial results from Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Nevada. By Wednesday, somewhere midday, we should get actual results from Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada, yada, yada, yada. Okay, the bottom line is there are some states that we may not even know till Thursday or later, which, if it's close, that's why, number one, I'm praying for a blowout. I really am. I don't know about y'all. Like my small group at church last night, we prayed over the election, and nobody prayed a Republican prayer. That's not what I'm saying. We prayed for our nation. We prayed for an unequivocal result, and we prayed for peace. Well, that unequivocal thing, I am hoping for it. I am praying for it. Why? Because that's what repudiates the opposition. That's what says, take what you campaigned on and go to the House. What I don't want to see is a razor-thin margin that's so close that the 5,000 lawyers that the campaigns have now got on retainers have to jump into business. Is there a right to, you know, challenge an election? Yeah, there is. There's a legal right to challenge an election. Some states, they actually trigger the recount if the percentage is within a certain parameter. Like if it's less than 1%, there are a number of states that have, if it's less than 1% difference, there's an automatic recount. So in other words, they can't certify the vote till the automatic recount has been completed. Some states are going to require that there has to be a petition filed before anything can be done. Most states are going to require they have to file a bond, meaning they have to post bond to ensure that this is not just a bad faith harassment type challenge. Anyway, all that to say, we got plenty of doings to go through, and I'm just hoping that we're not going to see races so close that we have no choice but to wait it out for days. So where are we on some things? By the way, did Peg Leg Dave just text in? Peg Leg, there you are. He says, here we go, Phil. Let's say our prayers and hope to God we can take our country back. Good to hear from you, Peg Leg. He just came to mind the other day. I was thinking about him, and I'm glad to hear you're out there, brother. All right. Got a piece here from Fox. There's new battleground numbers. All right, what are the battleground states? I think most of this crowd knows, but I'm going to say it anyway. Battleground states are the ones that are unknown. They're up for grabs. They are considered to be the states where it's at least purple, and so you have to, and it goes back and forth within the margin of error. Margin of error on a poll means when they poll it statistically, actuarially, they look at it and they go, okay, it's 50-50 with a margin of error plus or minus 3 points. What that means is it could be 51-49, 52-48. I mean, so the margin of error means they recognize that their testing is going to have scientifically a margin of error that it could skew the numbers they've got a little bit each way. It's kind of a way of hedging their bets. I will tell you right now, some of these pollsters, I believe, are hedging their bets, period. They're not wanting to risk their own reputation by calling the race one way or the other and running the risk of being seen as the ones that missed it. So some of what we're seeing right now being too close to call, some of it is, and in my opinion, some of it is so close they don't want to call because they don't want to run the risk of nobody hiring them next time because they got it wrong. All right, so anyway, the New York Times Siena College Battleground poll, which is usually one of the better polls, I'll be honest, just changed the lay of the land a little bit. It's the kind of thing that almost makes you nervous as a conservative. Former President Donald Trump leads Vice President Kamala Harris in Arizona, but Harris now, according to the New York Times poll, leads in Georgia, North Carolina, Nevada, and Wisconsin. What? Michigan and Pennsylvania are tied. Holy crap.
I feel like the wide consensus was that Trump had a pretty decent lead in Georgia. I mean, obviously, it's still a battleground state, but I most of the polls I've seen, he's up at least 2 points in Georgia. So that's that. There was also a poll that Harris was going to win Iowa, too, so that was out there somewhere.
And I'll be honest with you, I agree with Jeff Poor. Jeff made a comment earlier. If Iowa was actually in play right now, they'd be diverting money to Iowa, and they're not. It's not in
play. I think we're at the point in the race where all of the outlier polls go out to discourage a certain amount of voters on either side. So,
and they do that. They weaponize the polling sometimes. They literally get a poll, it's what they want, and they promo the crap out of it. And I think that's what's happening. Look, big things are happening. She's ahead in Iowa by 3 points. Bull crap. But here's the thing. Arizona, Trump's up by 4 points, according to New York Times. Harris is up by 1 point in Georgia, 2 points North Carolina, 3 points Nevada, 2 points Wisconsin, all within the margin of error. That's the New York Times poll. However, Real Clear Politics is one of the best places, in my opinion, to go because Real Clear Politics aggregates all the polls. In other words, Real Clear Politics polls the polls. So Real Clear Politics takes the polling average right now and shows Trump up 2.9 in Arizona, Trump up 1.2 in Nevada, Trump up by 0.3 in Pennsylvania, Trump up by 1.4 in North Carolina, Trump up by 2.3 in Georgia. In other words, Trump's up in all the battleground states, according to the Real Clear average. I take it back. Wisconsin and Michigan is barely Harris by less than a point. We got work to do. There's still work to do. That's the reason why Trump's holding a rally even as we speak. Trump and Elon Musk are on stage in Pennsylvania even as we speak. And I'm sure that they're doing the same thing on the Democrat side, and they should. This is what it takes. But right now, we're in that last dance, y'all, and the margins of error on all those points I just told you about, all those polls, the margins of error is roughly 3 to 4 points. So in other words, ain't nothing decided by any of those. What's decided is by the voters. It's absolutely decided by the voters. So more to do, more to come, And Peg Leg is texting in the show again. All right, let's take a break right now. We'll take that break. We'll come right back. I'll give you some more to think about as we talk about the electoral battleground. Why do we have an electoral college? How many votes do we have as a state? Why do we do this to ourselves? I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. I got a bunch of texts in. I'll be catching up on those momentarily. Let me just go through this stuff. I'm talking about electoral battlegrounds. So first of all, I will say this. Mark Halperin, some of y'all know who that is. Some of you don't because he used to be on MSNBC. But Mark Halperin's been an analyst who's been on MSNBC. I think he's been on Newsmax. He's made the rounds of a few networks. But anyway, he also has been pretty bearish on Kamala Harris winning. In other words, he does not think she's going to win. He's been pretty accurate in the past. He says right now that if Kamala does not win North Carolina, Arizona, and Georgia, then she has to run the entire Rust Belt states, which is Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and those don't look good. Pennsylvania, Wisconsin don't look good, and she's tied right now in Michigan with a too close to call. If Trump wins Wisconsin, things in Michigan and Pennsylvania gets really interesting, Halperin points out. So there's more to come, but let's talk about the Electoral College for a minute. In fact, I saw a text from Brian from Somerville. He says, Phil, can you explain why there's such a thing as battleground states? Shouldn't everybody be on equal footing? Well, the interesting thing is, in fact, he says, my opinion, it should be elected from just the people, not the Electoral College. I disagree, Brian. So here's why. First of all, the founders put this together, and they did it for a reason. The founders had a fear of what they called the tyranny of the majority. I mean, imagine if you live, well, like where I live, in a, you know, a medium-sized town in Alabama. And you found out that Atlanta, New York City, San Francisco, L.A., and Chicago were the only reasons why the votes went the way they did, because all they did was rely upon major population centers. And then you'd never see the campaigns because they wouldn't come here, because all they do is go to the major population centers. The big media markets would be the only places where they paid their money to run their ads, which, by the way, I know campaign ads get old. But if you own a radio station, a newspaper, or a TV station, those political ads are considered survival money. That's like Black Friday for retail shopping. That's the big deal. So the tyranny of the majority is exactly what the founders were scared of. In 1787, when they put together the Constitution, they had a lot of genius and foresight, but one of the things they also wanted to do was design a system to keep from having the more rural areas of America be overridden in their vote weight by the big population centers. With 50 states, how do you do that? Well, what they decided to do was put together a system where every state's popular vote went to one or the other. In this case, we have a two-party system right now, so it's pretty much one or the other. You can have independents. We do sometimes. But the reality is, when the vote weight leans in a certain direction at the state level, then the state has votes that are based upon the number of senators, and every state has two, and the number of congressional representatives. And Alabama has seven, so Alabama has nine electoral votes. In other words, within the overall national system of voting, what Alabama has in terms of its representation, its population has now been represented in the vote according to its size, if that makes sense. And you can see that come into play sometimes in a big way. Well, these battleground states you're talking about, Brian, they're battlegrounds because their politics are mixed, and their politics are either more purple or are changing as we speak, because right now Pennsylvania is one that is changing as we speak. Michigan may be changing as we speak. Wisconsin may be changing as we speak. It's crazy. But I'm looking at this and going, there's no way in the world the heartland of America would get a fair shake if everybody had to wait and see what New York City was going to do. And that's what would happen. The big population centers would dominate everything about our politics. Now, you can see that within the state level, like I had friends from New York State. They lived in Buffalo, upstate New York. And they said there's times, politically speaking, they just wish that New York City would just carve itself off and become a new state so they could please get somebody elected that they all like. I had friends from Oregon I served with overseas. They were solid and conservative and just plain right. But they were east of the Cascades. West of the Cascades on the coastal regions of the state of Oregon, progressive liberal, just absolutely like San Francisco style politics. East of the Cascades, might as well be living in Alabama. And they said they just wish the West Coast sometimes would break off into the sea so they could finally vote somebody in. That's within the state, though. We don't want that to be the way it is in the national perspective. So the Electoral College is why we have it. What?
I think it's important, too, to remember, like I see a lot of Democrats claim the Electoral College is not democratic. And I think it's important to remember that America is a republic with democratic processes. And, Perfect. You know, the Constitution was pretty much an agreement between the government and the states. So I think, well, there's a lot of stuff the Founding Fathers did that I think was genius, but you get the best of both worlds in the democracy aspect of, you know, states like California, which are bigger, get 54 delegates, where Alabama gets, what, 9? So that counts in for the population, but also it's not just a straight popular vote. You know, that gives it, so where states, the state's votes still matter as much, you know, New Hampshire's votes matter as much as California.
That's
so
right.
I think That's it's right. the best of both worlds, and I think it's the best way to accompany for, you know, both the democracy and it being a republic.
And, oh, by the way, it's worked for almost 250 years.
That as well, yeah.
And you know, what's interesting is you just said it. Will you read my notes? Because I said on here, it preserves federalism. There it is, right there. All right, more of that. We got a friend calling in from Pennsylvania. Give us the lay of the land. Matt Briette is calling in. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. Day before the election, we're running through some issues related to electoral battlegrounds. And, you know, we bring on the best guests. In fact, just plan on our live stream tomorrow night. We already got confirmation. It looks like we've got Attorney General Steve Marshall. We've got U.S. Senator Katie Britt. We've got Alabama's Chairman John Wall. So we got to have a great crew tomorrow night chiming in on our live stream. But calling in right now is somebody I had the pleasure of meeting a few years ago. You may recall I was with the Alabama Policy Institute. They still tie into our show quite often, and we use them as a resource for conservative policy and think tank issues. Well, there's like an organization like that in every state, sometimes two or three. And we love to interact, and we do so a lot of times through a thing called the State Policy Network. A guy that I met a few years ago is Matt Briette. And Matt Briette previously served as the president and CEO of the Commonwealth Foundation, which is the Pennsylvania version of like API here in Alabama. He also, by the way, prior to that, had been director of education policy for the Mackinac Center, which is a similar think tank on conservative policy issues in Michigan. Matt was named this year as one of Pennsylvania's Pennsylvania Power 100, recognizing that kind of group as the most influential people in public and private sectors in his whole state. I know for a fact politics in Pennsylvania is different because of Matt Briette. So let me quit talking and bring him on. Hey, Matt, how you doing today?
Hey, good to be with you, Phil. Great to chat.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for making time. I know you're on the road, so I appreciate you making time for us. Listen, Pennsylvania, lots of talk about you guys in the national battleground fight here. What do you see on the ground? What are you thinking up there right now?
Boy, it is very tight, Phil. All the polling that you're hearing nationally, we're seeing in all of our races that we're involved in, and Commonwealth partners and our political action committees are involved in attorneys general race, our local, you know, state house and state senate. And all of our polling just says this is going to be tight. And so the metrics, though, look favorable for Republicans. But I make the analogy of football that it's like we're ahead in rushing yards and passing yards and turnover takeaways. But you know what? There's still time left in the game, and who knows if the other team kicks a 65-yard field goal to win it. So it's going to be that tight, but I'd rather be us than them right now. I'll just put it that way.
Well, that's good to hear. Let me ask you. I mean, from afar, we hear reports all the time about different things, and you know, if social media is to be believed, then Martians are landing tomorrow too. But anyway, that being said, One of the things I keep hearing, too, that could be a factor in the race is the Amish vote. What are you hearing about the Amish vote in Pennsylvania? Is that real? Is that going to happen?
Well, we kind of hear that every cycle, but I certainly hope that, look, we're going to need everybody to show up. The Democrats are certainly motivated. They know how to put together a ground game. I will say that I think the Republicans are as organized as I've ever seen them, and they're certainly watching at all of the election places, county election offices. So it seems that the Republicans are getting people out, including the Amish, including people who have a low propensity of getting out and voting. So, again, all of the numbers look good. Our mail-in votes are better than they have been. Democrats are down. Voter registration over the last 10 years has gone from a Democratic advantage of 1 million voters to now under 300,000. So our purple state, I think we're moving in the right direction, and hopefully that means a lot of our voters show up tomorrow.
Well, and a lot of people don't realize that, much like Alabama, we had quite a dynamic at our state level where it was Democrat-controlled forever. In fact, I was part of the 2010 wave. We had 136 straight years of Democrat control of our legislature. You were very instrumental and with Commonwealth in helping to gain entree and having a real voice for conservative politics in the state. I mean, Pennsylvania, for all of the Rust Belt talk we have and the Blue Wall talk we have, you've made great strides in the last decade, have you not?
We have. Thankfully, we have, because otherwise Pennsylvania would be going down the path of Illinois and becoming a California or a New York. But because of patriots standing up, we have been able to stave off the far left. Eric Holder, as I'm sure you're well aware, has been laboring in Pennsylvania for the last three election cycles, trying to flip our state house and Senate. And we've been able to hold them off until this very last election. The Democrats took our state house by one vote. Wow. They have a 102-101 majority. But I believe we will flip that back this cycle. We will hold our Senate, and then hopefully we'll keep marching forward. And love to see Pennsylvania turn red here over the years and reverse that trend of states like ours going blue.
Absolutely. In fact, I remember one of the stories you told me several years ago was that there was a period of time when you were not even welcome in the state house. Like you wouldn't even be allowed in for a meeting. They would escort you back out the door, if I recall. And that's changed.
It has. And those were the Republican offices, Phil, that we were not welcome in. And so, you know, things have dramatically changed. We have been able to help reshape our legislature and have free market Republicans that are not only in office but in leadership, which was something that didn't exist 20 years ago when I started at Commonwealth Foundation. Hey, I do have one shout out. You said that you got Steve Marshall on tomorrow. He's become a good friend to us in Pennsylvania simply because we have one of the top attorneys general's races in the country. And Steve and the Republican Attorney General's Association have been tremendous partners for us in Pennsylvania. And I know Steve has been chair of that organization, and they have really helped us. I think we're going to pull that one off, which would be really important, as you know, having the chief law enforcement officer, someone who actually believes in the rule of law, rather than trying to use that office to create laws as an attorney general. So Steve has been very helpful to us in Pennsylvania.
Well, he's been a friend of this show and really a friend of me, too, for a number of years. He's a great guy. And so I'm glad to hear that's the way that's been. Hey, let me ask you in the next few minutes here before we go, if you have any insight. So I did not realize until I was reading your bio for today's show that you were at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy in Michigan for a number of years. So, I mean, do you have any insights on Michigan right now? Because they're saying that one's still too close to call right now, too. I mean, Pennsylvania, Michigan, good Lord.
It is. I mean, even that Senate race could be in play. We don't know. You know, they have felt some severe setbacks in Michigan where it's gone blue through and through. The legislature, both the House and the Senate, as well as obviously the governor, But I think they are putting up a good fight there. We've got some allies there that have rallied the troops similar to what we've done in Pennsylvania. And so I'm hopeful. Look, it could be a really good night for President Trump. If so, I think they can drag along states like Pennsylvania and Michigan, and you can see some down ballot help there. They can definitely use it in Michigan, and I'm rooting for them.
Absolutely. And I got to ask you, with regards to your home state now, Pennsylvania, I mean, that's been a centerpiece for a lot of things that have happened in this crazy election cycle we've had. I mean, we've had two assassination attempts on President Trump. We've got the decapitation of the Democrat side with, you know, Biden dropping off the ticket at the last minute after winning the primary. But let me ask you, did the Butler, PA assassination attempt, has that galvanized a base at all? Has that had an impact on Pennsylvania voters as a state?
Without a doubt, that certainly helped. And I know from just my own personal experience of people who are having trouble voting for Trump, they certainly weren't voting for Kamala Harris. But that type of character that you saw after that caused a number of folks that I know say, okay, I am with Trump. And so I think that you certainly saw that. And I think, you know, Elon Musk put it quite well. He says you see the character of a man after that rises up after an assassination attempt. And you can't – that's yeah. Nothing that some, you know, political consultant can teach anybody. That just comes from the heart. So I think that helped certainly a lot of people say that's who I want to represent our country in a world that desperately needs somebody who's strong. And so I think that conveyed precisely the message that a lot of people are looking for.
Wow. Yeah. And I completely agree. It's become one of those iconic photographs, too, of this entire cycle. Maybe one of the most iconic of the decade, of him standing up with his fist in the air and blood on his face. But
You also put him there in the McDonald's outfit and the trash
yeah.
truck, and those will be some things that will certainly be remembered from 2024 election.
I saw somebody said, you know, with regards to Peanut the Squirrel, this thing this past weekend, that if Trump puts on a squirrel suit tomorrow on stage, he wins the election by 5 points. But hey, last question for you.
Whatever it takes.
That's right. Last question for you, brother. Just wondering, the Rust Belt states, the unions have traditionally always been strong Democrat, and largely speaking, they still are. But this year, the shockwave for Democrats was when they did not get the endorsement of the Teamsters. And I'm wondering, how did that play into Pennsylvania? Has that been a big factor?
Oh, I'll tell you what, Phil, this is a huge factor in Pennsylvania. I think it is the recognition between what I call the hard hat unions, the guys who actually make stuff, and the bureaucrat unions, the people who just take stuff. And so, you know, you got the government unions that are actually hurting the hard hat union guys. They're the ones that have kids stuck in schools that don't work. They're the ones that are paying higher and higher taxes for our illegal immigration that's impacting our schools, having to provide more services and such. So I think that we have definitely experienced that shift in allegiances in Pennsylvania. And if it's not happening at the top, you know, brass of the union leaders, it is absolutely happening amongst the members. And I think that is why you're seeing such a shift. And I got to tell you, Phil, I love it that we are the working party, the working man's party, the people
yeah.
that work for a living. And that's where it has always should have been. And we finally get to own that. And I love seeing that shift happen.
Oh, man, don't you know it? It's the wind of change, and it's the way it's supposed to be. It's actually not the change. It's just like making things the way they really are. But
that's right. That's right.
All right. Well, listen, Matt Briatt, it was great to connect with you again, man. And I hope to stay connected and maybe talk to you again in the future. But in the meantime, safe travels right now. And we look forward to Pennsylvania doing good things tomorrow.
You bet. Thanks, Phil. Great to chat.
All right. Take care. That was Matt Briatt. He's the founder and president and CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Commerce, or Chamber of Entrepreneurs now in Pennsylvania. And he's been heavily involved in changing the dynamic of politics in that state. I mean, if there's a guy who should get a trophy for changing state politics, he might be on that list. All right, listen, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back. I ran a bit long, so we'll have a short segment. I'll catch up on some text messages, and we'll keep moving through the material. We got stuff, y'all. Let's talk. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades is what we're doing. I got a bunch of text messages. Let me grab a few here. John C. from Madison says, if my texter would please load, thank you. It says, it's a buffering now. It's just going to talk about it. It's going to think about it for a minute. We'll get your text in a minute there, John C.
Can you read it? Yeah. What's so, well, first he texted that Dale Jackson got suspended for a week for telling Democrats to vote on a Wednesday, which he's told that story a couple times on the show when I was there. But then he texted about didn't Pennsylvania get 800,000 votes for Biden at about 2 a.m. in 2020?
Oh, Pennsylvania had issues. Now, Pennsylvania's done a bit of cleanup, but Pennsylvania still has some of the same people in charge of their issues. All the more reason why we hope to see a Republican attorney general in that state, which is what apparently Matt Briette is helping with in a big way. My texts are still down, so keep going, man. What else you got?
Let's see. Missy from Fauntville says, so strange, the states that could decide the election won't be ready tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's so strange, and yeah, it's also so frustrating. And I'll be honest with you, I am ready. I am so ready. I don't want to nationalize our elections. I don't want D.C. telling all the states how to do their business per se. Now, we currently have, you know, certain things that come out of D.C. already. Like, you know, we've got age limits. We've got the non-discrimination. We've got the ability for the vote to be completed by a certain day. Those come from D.C. Beyond that, the states put together their state laws to just comport with the federal requirements. Well, some of those state laws are just jacked up. I don't see why there can't be a national requirement for photo ID, which is not taking away from the states. It's just saying a national requirement that certain things will happen and have to be validated. A national requirement, oh, by the way, that voter rolls be cleaned by a certain date of any illegals or non-citizens. Just things like that can be done. We're not telling you how to do it. We're just saying, make sure these things are in place. Here's the building blocks. Go you therefore. My texter decided to work again. Which one did you read me? Sandy from Elkmont? Did you get that
one? Well, the last one I had was Missy from Vaughtville. I was about to read John from Huntsville next.
Go ahead.
He said, Phil, I'm hoping that Trump wins, but if there's a blowout, it's because Kamala illegally wins in a landslide.
Yeah, there's no way she wins by a landslide. If she wins, it's going to be by a nose. But I don't think so. I think we're trending towards a good night right now. I'm remaining pragmatically optimistic. How about that?
Yeah.
Brian from Decatur says, I'm glad to hear that you have such a wide audience, including some Democrats, especially those that like to be condescending toward others that do not vote the same way they do. I'm sure they appreciate that your program is over by 5 p.m. because that gives them plenty of time to go upstairs to ask their mommies what they're having for dinner. That was worthy of a laugh track. So far, Brian from Decatur is winning the text lines. James from Alabaster says, the Dems have to learn how to cheat and win big elections while acting innocent afterwards. Notice how quiet Pelosi and Schumer have been through all this. Knowing how much they hate Trump, they would have been more vocal that Harris, I can't, with that sentence didn't come out right. I have a funny feeling something's up behind the scene, evilness, praying for a fair election that Trump wins. Yep. Brian from Somerville again says, regardless of population, you only get two votes. What? Oh, he said, I would agree. I'm sorry. He's got more text. I just read the last one. He said, I would agree with my thing about the electoral. He said, but if every state only gets two person votes, wouldn't that fix the problem?
I don't think that would incorporate the population aspect.
You got to have some measure of the fact that there are states that are big and they've earned the right to have some clout, but they don't need to have dominance because of one city in their state. All right. More on this. Y'all stay tuned. The last dance. We're going into it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one. Don't argue with me. It's Alabama, y'all. Alabama, y'all. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. I just noticed, I almost missed my words out because I looked over at the text lines and I saw Phil from Raleigh, North Carolina just text in. All right, this is a little bit of a long text, but I'm going to read it. He says, Phil, greetings from Battleground State, North Carolina. He said, sadly, don't be surprised if Harris wins this state. Don't believe all the right-wing hype that North Carolina will break towards Trump. It won't. I've been spending a lot of time, I lost my train of thought here. I've been spending a lot of time with my family and friends in deep red eastern North Carolina where I grew up, and the lack of enthusiasm outside the hardcore Trump base is palpable. His rally in Kinston, North Carolina yesterday was low energy and easy to get into. A lot of my family and friends down east who were solid for Trump in the past have soured on him. However, the thing hurting him most is the horrible slate of statewide candidates for governor, attorney general, education superintendent, etc., especially the gubernatorial candidate Mark Robinson, who's a complete moron. Well, Phil, you sound extremely pessimistic in general. I mean, like, extremely pessimistic just in general before you even talk about this stuff. I don't think your self-poll is accurate, Phil. I'm not saying it's going to be a runaway, but I don't think that everything we're seeing is saying that this is just a dour time to be in North Carolina and you hate the idea of being a Republican in North Carolina. And oh, poo, what are we seeing, Eeyore? He says, hopefully I am wrong and you will serve me some humble pie on Wednesday. I look forward to slicing off a big hunk of it for you, my brother. But don't go sour on us, brother. Just stay in the fight and tell everybody go vote. If I got a call right now, Wolverine Dan's on the line. Wolverine Dan, what is going to happen in your home state of Michigan?
For one thing, don't ask Gretchen Wilson. She'll give you a wrong answer. listen, my man, I'll tell you what. I'll probably call tomorrow because I'll be busy and probably at the polls for sure to vote. I think everybody understands something. Some countries you can't vote at all right? And so your vote's very important. The other thing's very important is that everybody, please research your candidate, no matter Democrat or Republican, and have a decision made up before you walk in that poll. Which one's going to give you the best, more bang for your buck? And these days, we could really use that. And I'll break it down real quick. And it's not because it's a black woman or Asian woman, or even when she kind of cackles a little bit, it drives me nuts. But you know what? Those things really mean nothing to me. Just like when President Trump gets a little rude, that doesn't mean anything to me. And I'm going to tell you why. It's dollars and cents. It's what's best for my value, more bang for my buck for my family, puts more money in my pocket, secures my borders. And former President Trump did it for 3 years, and then he got into COVID. And thank God he was the president because he kind of fast-forwarded the vaccine. So there's a lot of good things that he did. Again, you might not like the way he talks, everybody, but listen, bottom line is look at your bank account. Look at the secure border where the illegal aliens don't come in here and harm us. And the bad guys go away and business come back into our country. They were overseas and we're making our country better. It's things like that is the reason why I vote. Everybody, please, that's really what it all boils down to. Because their talk means nothing if you can't back it up.
Oh, well said, my brother. Absolutely well said. And I wish that everybody would actually not only vote their conscience, but vote their research. So, yep, great point, brother. We'll see how it goes. Man. Thanks, man. Take care. He's got a great point, though. And listen, I said the other day on the show something I thought was significant. So I'll do a quick aside here and go back to that. If you're not clear, you know, and me, I'm a political junkie. JP is a political junkie. We read this stuff. We talk about it every day. I know that not everybody does. And I know that there's a huge study out. Like, for instance, I talked the other day about the Christian vote. We're told right now that there's a roughly 104 million Americans who are, you know, eligible to vote who just won't this cycle. For one reason or another, they'll just lay out. Of those, we're told that 32 million are conservative or consider themselves evangelical Christians. 32 million that just don't plan to vote. And of that 32 million, 68% say that it's just, you know, not something they understand. They really don't get into it much. They don't understand the issues or the candidates. They're just not their bag. And that's 22 million people who just don't see the interest in it. And I'm like, what? Okay, how about this? It takes an interest in you. It does. If you're going to lay out, you're going to abdicate your right to complain, but they're still going to tax you. They're still going to regulate you. They're still going to question your civil liberties. They're still going to encroach upon your lifestyle. They're still going to make it more difficult to run your business. So don't think for a second that because you don't understand it and you lay out on your vote means that that's going to change things. In fact, all you're going to do is hurt things. So that being said, there was a great, a very dynamic referral by, I forgot his name now, Sims, I believe, and he runs Summit Ministries. He said, if Christians aren't sure, and I think you could apply this to anybody, not just Christians, but if you're not sure who to vote for, if this is really not your bag and you don't understand the issues, then look at it from three categories. Look at it from life, liberty, and property. Just life, liberty, and property. What are we talking about? If you look at it from the standpoint of life, how do you feel about life? Is life sacred? Not just pro-life. I'm not even talking about that. How about things like who was more apt to let your grandma die by herself in the nursing home in COVID and not let you visit? Who is more apt to do things that require a level of quality of life that you don't want? Who is the one that is running for office that impacts life, actual life? Which one of them calls for things like, mercy killings in the hospitals? Which one of them says we will or will not fund those things that preserve or support life? There's life. How about liberty? Which one of the candidates most likely supports your Second Amendment right to bear arms, your First Amendment right to freedom of speech, your First Amendment right also to have a free and open press, which, by the way, is not all free and open these days, or for that matter, your right to assemble? Which one is the guy that's going to run or the lady's going to run that's more likely to afford you due process and make sure you have equal rights under the law? All these things. That's life and liberty, and then the last one is property. Which one is more likely to take your stuff? Which one is more likely to tax you into oblivion? Which one is more likely to diminish your capacity to earn a living? Life, liberty, and property. If you look at it from those three things right there, that's all you got to do. Look at your own views on life. Look at your own views on your constitutional liberties. Look at your own views on what's in your wallet and whether you're allowed to own things. You'll find your candidate real quick when you do that. Tell anybody that doesn't know who they're going to vote for to look at it from life, liberty, and property. I think they'll get there pretty quick. I'm doing this section right now. I'm calling it the last dance because it's where we are. It's the last dance. The prom's almost over. They're about to hit the go-home mode. The band's winding up for the last dance. Where are they doing? What are they doing? What are they doing right now? What are the campaigns doing? Well, I mean, like, one of them is spending money. Holy cow. This has been the most expensive race in U.S. history, I believe. Just in the last week alone, over $1 billion has been spent on political ads. That's not all presidential. There's down ballot races too. But just shy of $1 billion, according to CNBC, has been spent on political ads up and down the ballot in the last week. Whew, Lord, my gosh. The most expensive race over the last week, of course, is the presidential race, where $272 million has been spent on advertising alone in the last week. This article, by the way, came out yesterday. The vast majority of the almost $1 billion spent on ads has come in down ballot races. Okay, so I get it, $272 million, but yeah, so you got like an 80-20 percentage break, but still, when you think about it, all the down ballots add up to 80%. A two-person race adds up to $272 million. We got just like, what, $994 million spent, oh my gosh, in all the things related to commercial advertising. Trump's campaign has been narrowly outspent by Harris. Where are we right now? In this one, $272 million spent on ads. Trump's campaign narrowly outspent by Harris's campaign by $43 million to $40 million. But Democrat super PACs have been helping the parties. They spent a ton of money, too. And then you look at all the down ballots, like the two races that are the most spending by themselves are Florida. $19 million in ad spending right now on a referendum about abortion rights. My gosh. And $18.5 million on a ballot there to a ballot referendum to legalize marijuana. I mean, the amount of money being spent in this political campaign is unstinking believable. Unbelievable. Where are the candidates right now? Well, they're holding dueling rallies in the battleground of battlegrounds, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, that's where Gettysburg is. Just saying, major turning point in the Civil War. How does Pennsylvania always have this stuff? Vice President Kamala Harris, according to Fox News, Dateline this morning, is making a last-minute pitch to supporters in the biggest of the battlegrounds, calling on Pennsylvanians to vote for her, saying no one can sit on the sidelines. I agree with that. Her rival, Republican nominee, former President Donald Trump, is also held a rally on Pennsylvania on Sunday. And I think he's there again right now. He's doing another rally today. They got 19 electoral votes. So think about this. The battleground states are not only, where's that sheet I've got of electoral votes? The battleground states right now are not just battlegrounds because they're purple. They're also battlegrounds because of the vote spreads they have. I mean, picture this. With 270 being the magic number, right, in the Electoral College, 270 to win. There's a website, by the way, called 270 to win. It's a great website to go check out. Pennsylvania carries 19 votes by itself. Michigan carries 15 votes by itself. What are my other ones? Georgia. Look down the list. Hello, Georgia. 16 votes by itself. So these battleground states, where's North Carolina? My brethren texting in a while ago saying North Carolina looks grim. He thinks 16 votes in North Carolina. So the battleground states are not only battlegrounds, they're also big number battlegrounds. We start, the race is over if we get a decisive, like, can't deny it kind of win. And we've seen huge early voter turnout by Republicans. If that's the case, if they can count on the early voting and they see overwhelming numbers, they can call a race tomorrow night. But we'll, more to come on that. We'll see. Going to take a break right now. We'll come right back from this break, and I'll tell you a little more about the last dance. What are the Amish doing, and why does it matter? I'll tell you. Oh, I'll tell you. And then you got all kinds of stuff happening with Kamala Harris going on Saturday Night Live. Oh, yeah. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, night before the election. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Got a bunch of text messages. Let me catch up on a few of those. You guys are amazing. Mike from Florence says, tip, if JP is going to be working the election coverage, just remember overtime is still taxable. Tips are still taxable, too, so don't tell me what I got.
Shh, we won't tell anybody.
Stop. hey, by the way, that makes a great segue. Not the overtime piece, but no, we tomorrow night, we are really proud of our new studio here at Right Side. We have a new podcasting studio that we just put together, and literally the beta testing has been done even as recently as this weekend. And tomorrow night, we are going to be live streaming from the Right Side studio from 7:30 to 9:30 in the evening on election coverage. We got some great callers already slated. I can tell you right now, it looks like we're going to have U.S. Senator Katie Britt, John Wall from the State Republican Party, Attorney General Steve Marshall. And then the crew is going to be myself and JP and Butters and Birdman are all going to be in studio. So just all you got to do, 7:30 to 9:30, is check it out online. Easiest way to find it is go to our website, rightsidemedia.org. That's rightsidemedia.org. Or you can find us at all the other places.
You can find us on the Right Side Media Twitter page at @rightside_media, or you could go to the YouTube or on Rumble or on Twitch. We'll be streaming on all of those as well.
All of them. It's gonna be a hoot. I'm looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. And I do know that at least one of our guests is going to be calling in. I think John Wall's calling in from Mar-a-Lago.
Man, that's something.
I'd like to be there tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Several more text messages. Badger from Athens says, on this voting eve, a reminder. Remember, it is not a test about who you like or who least offends you. It's not actually about you. It's about the future, what we leave behind for our children and grandchildren and so on. Badger, great text, man. Jeff from Indiana says, his text broke off.
His text broke up like three times.
Yeah, like I don't understand what's happening here. I've got the same text, but it came through in three parts. So now I got to put it back together. Hey, Phil, the problem is not with the government. The problem lies in the low information and no information voter who uses their right to vote without even knowing what they're voting for. Basically, it's dereliction of duty. As a citizen of this great country, I'm not in favor of everyone voting, because if you're a voter and have no clue about the person you're voting for, then shame on you. I liken it to giving a five-year-old a gun and telling them to, and then it broke off, and we'll get the rest later.
But I think we get the gist of what he said.
I think we get
there,
the gist of it. Yeah, but we can't do that, man. You can't say you get rights and you don't. So, you know, just can't do it that way, man. Pretty soon they'll say, well, you get a gun and you don't, and you get to speak and you don't. And so it's either a right or it ain't. John from Huntsville says, here's how I do my research. If the politician is running as a Republican, I'm voting for them. If they're running as a Democrat, I'm not voting for them. Fair enough, man.
That's all there is to it.
He's got it down. Brand spanking new texter in the text line. Glad to have you there. Darla from Athens. Say, Phil, this is Darla from Athens. I had the exact same thing happen to me, my flying squirrel and my chipmunk. Really? That's Peanut, he says. Only I was a licensed rehabber by the state of Alabama. I still have a very bad disdain for our state government. They sent a game warden and a deputy to confiscate my animals, and then they were euthanized. All from an anonymous tip. Oh, Darla, that is awful. Darla, text me back and tell me what year that was when that happened. I'm sorry about that. That's awful. Becky from Shelby County says a pastor on TV yesterday said you're not voting on a pastor but a president, something like that. That's a reasonable point. It's true. And I still look at it, though, and I feel like, as a matter of faith, I feel better about where Trump is than Kamala. So there's that. Casey from Junebug from Hartsell says, I need guides on how to vote on Amendment 1, referring to Franklin County. Do you have any advice? Well, I did a whole segment on that the other day.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, Junebug, I'll do this real quick. Everybody in the state is going to have probably some local amendments. Check them out, see what they are, depending on what county you're in. But everybody in the whole state is going to have one single constitutional amendment, Amendment 1. It's really not scary. I'm actually going to vote for it. Franklin County owns land that was given to them in the 1800s, and it was dedicated to the education department the Board of Education for the county of Franklin. It is land they don't intend to ever build on, but it is land that has a great deal of value. But because of the way it was given to them, the Constitution of the state of Alabama prevents it being resold for anything other than education purposes. Well, it could be sold and make a lot of money for the schools. So all they're saying is they would like to amend the Constitution to allow them to sell it. There is some reason to believe that another Buc-ee's may want to come to the state. And if that's the case, then, you know, wouldn't that be cool? So that being said, all Amendment 1 does, is my understanding, is allow the school board to sell a piece of property that currently is prohibited from sale by the state, and they've had it since the 1800s, so why not? That's where it is. So, Junebug, I'm voting yes. More on that, more on other stuff. We're going to jump into Democracy is Messy. Also, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Oh, wow. I'll tell you what, we got all kinds of stuff going on here. Stan from Huntsville, by the way, just texted in. Stan says, I think your guest from Pennsylvania said that Kamala is not mentioning Trump's name today, staying positive. If true, that's the behavior of a confident candidate, and that's scary. Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you, I see it just the opposite, too. I think they also know that the level of vitriol and negativity has somewhat backfired on them in recent days. And so I cannot help but think that they found that their best strategy is to get off of the insult bandwagon, because they had the whole Mark Cuban thing go south on them. They had the garbage comments go south on them, and they're trying to not take a chance on one more, you know, hate comment sort of tainting the well, poisoning the well.
I think it's more of damage control from you know, Joe Biden's garbage comments. You know, like you said, I would not say it's her being confident. I'll say that.
By the way, have you considered the irony? The irony, the absolute sick irony of the fact that Joe Biden is not allowed to be on any more campaign calls, but he can make calls with other heads of state.
Yeah.
And that he is not allowed to run for office, but he's still allowed to hold the office.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. It's
who's running the country right now?
I think that's the biggest piece of evidence of the Democrats. Well, first of all, that their priorities are staying in power and having a Democrat in power instead of actually having competent people run the nation. But also, I think it shows that the Democratic machine is a thing of just, you know, Joe Biden, you're just a cog in the machine. Kamala Harris is just a cog in the machine to keep the Democrats in power. It's like it's the only thing on their mind is winning and staying in power instead of, you know, hey, if this Joe Biden guy can't run for another 4 years, should we like replace him right now? You know, but that's not going to come across their minds. And it's, you know, because like I said, it's not about winning, you know, when you're talking about competency of a president, which winning is all they care about.
Yeah. So, all right, we got dueling rallies going on in Pennsylvania. We also got, oh, by the way, the Amish. What's happening with the Amish, Phil? Pray tell, what is happening with the Amish? So the Amish don't vote, typically, but there's talk. And you heard my friend Matt Briette, who called in earlier from Pennsylvania. He said, yeah, there's like talk about the Amish every year, but this year may be different. In fact, the headline for townhall.com says why this year could be different. Dateline Sunday. The Amish traditionally don't vote in presidential elections due to faith-based beliefs and Christianity's historic separatism from mainstream society. Still, this year brings a whole new ballgame as candidates seek support from the horse and buggy riding group. The Amish are pretty conservative, obviously. And there's about 90,000 Amish in Pennsylvania, 84,000 in Ohio, 26,000 in Wisconsin. A decent amount live in Indiana, New York, and Missouri. If they decided to go block vote, if they got busy, well, here's the thing. Trump lost Pennsylvania with all the shenanigans that happened, but he lost Pennsylvania by 80,000 votes. 90,000 Amish can have an impact, a major impact. And why would they come out? Well, one of the things that happened this year, and I've forgotten the name, and JP, you might look it up for me, but there was an Amish farm in Pennsylvania that was raided, And the government declined to allow them to be able to sell their milk and free range products direct sale. They had to go through like a distributor system, and they really, the Amish community really felt put out by this and felt put upon by this. Let me know when you find that. But what's the guy's name?
I've got the story here on Fox News. I'm currently trying to.
Was it last year or this year?
It was March 1st of this year. The business owner, his name was Michael Jacobs.
That's it. The Jacobs farm was raided. He was selling fresh milk and goods that did not have, you know, additives and all that kind of stuff. And who raided them, did it say?
Let me see.
Federal or state?
It says they dropped an injunction against an Amish farmer who suffered a police raid last month for selling milk. It seems like state. What I'm reading, yes.
Well, Democrat controlled state.
Yeah, because it's saying that Pennsylvania, you need a license to sell raw milk, so state issue.
Here's one of the other things that may be a reason why Kamala is trying to stay very positive in the last couple of days, because she and NBC got into big trouble over the weekend. So Kamala got an entire skit. She appeared live on Saturday Night Live. She got a whole skit of her doing the laughing grin, the scripted moment, this is fun, look at me, I'm the fun candidate, except it was a violation of the FCC's rules for equal time. Here's the deal. Media has license to operate. So media has to constantly be, you know, on its guard not to violate the terms of licensure. NBC is licensed. They are licensed and given the opportunity to be on the airwaves, meaning that they cannot abuse their government license. So the FCC has an actual equal time rule that has been in place for decades, and it requires that media, if a candidate is given access to the media without pay, without buying it, that the other candidates in that same race have to be afforded the same opportunity. So the FCC came out today and said that NBC is in violation of the FCC rules, threatened penalties and sanctions, and went on to say that NBC has to offer equal time to Trump campaign. Well, everybody knew when they did this exactly what was going to happen. They thought, forgiveness versus permission. Let's just break the rule and see what happens. They knew what they were doing. They got her on there for a big, giant skit, and it was ooty, ooty, ooty. It was fun, fun, fun. Except that they knew for a fact that there was no way for them to give full equal time opportunities to the Trump campaign. I did read, if I got it right here, I did read, though, that the Trump campaign is being given free airtime now during NBC's, I think they got a NASCAR race, and they've got Monday Night Football. So they're being given some serious airtime that would have cost them millions and millions of dollars, and they have to. NBC has to give it to them now, either or that or face major penalties.
And there's a free 90-second ad of Trump just talking, and, you know, which it like those the free ads, first of all, but the 90 we give Trump 90 seconds on your platform if you're MSNBC. You know, I could just tell
it's got to burn them.
They were really not happy about
That's got to burn them. And then the last thing has been the rhetoric has been so strong. Before I jump to the next topic, the rhetoric has been unbelievable to the extent that PJ Media has a story that came out yesterday. Democrat hypocrites are accusing Trump of plotting to throw his political enemies in internment camps. You can't get past some of the hateful rhetoric that has been in this campaign. Here in the last dance, this is what I'm calling this dipper, the last dance of this race, we have seen more things. Like the narrative barrage that we've gotten in the last few days that Trump's going to open the Fourth Reich's concentration camps, you know, and all they said about how they vastly misrepresented his comments on Liz Cheney and how they, you know, called everybody garbage. And so I really do believe, my friend from Pennsylvania's comments notwithstanding, I really do believe that what we're seeing right now is her trying to stay positive because she screwed up so much stuff in the last few days. More to come, y'all. It's going to be tight. It's going to be so tight. I got several text messages. Let me jump on a few. David from Bucky's checking in. He says, Phil, if you remove if you remove those voting for Harris because she's a female, because she is black, and because she's not Trump, Trump wins by a landslide. He says, likewise, if you vote purely on real issues, again, Trump wins in a landslide. Landslide. No one knows where Harris stands on the issue. She flip-flops every day. It's true. It's true. There's a lot of people that are just voting not Trump. I think Kareem's even said he's voting not Trump more than anything. Bruce from Springville says, I really admire the heart of the Amish people and how they're stepping up and helping the people of North Carolina. They're really making our federal government look pathetic. They really are. There's been a huge turnout of Amish helping with recovery efforts in the wake of Hurricane Helene. It's been cool to watch. Glenn from Bluntsville, my job's paying me 1 hour pay to go vote. There you go. I've told my staff at the law firm, and I guess I'm telling you too, JP. Oh, you've already voted. Take time during the work day to go work. I mean, to go vote. I'm fine with that. I think you should. Last one for the break. John from Harvest says, to paraphrase Paul, pray without ceasing for our country and then vote. I agree with that. Absolutely. Take me to a break, JP. We'll take this break. We'll come right back. We'll switch to the next part. Democracy is messy. What do you think is going to happen? Is there going to be any civil unrest? Is there going to be trouble? We'll talk about that in detail. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Just saw a post on, it always kills me when people do this. I'm at a Trump rally and there's nothing going on here. Low turnout, really bad, really bad. There's nobody outside. I'm like, well, that's because they're all inside. But Anyway, this guy insists. He's a reporter. He insists. And he's all these people tagging on going, I was there. It was full. He says, I was there. It wasn't full. What's your point? It's the day before the election. He's in North Carolina in Raleigh-Durham, which is a blue area in North Carolina. And you know, to my texter's credit earlier, this is, you know, maybe an indication that there was a smaller turnout at a rally. Still had several thousand people there. But then here's my point. The guy who's texting it is a reporter for Al Jazeera. That's all I needed to know. That is all I needed to know. I even texted that, tweeted that to him. I said, you work for Al Jazeera. That's all I need to know. You know, when I was in Baghdad, we actually used the, there was a local Al Jazeera office, and we had one of our Overwatch sites that kept their eyes on Al Jazeera's. And if we saw them rush out of the building to go somewhere, that meant we knew something. Because they always got a heads up on the attacks. And they would go photograph them while they were happening because the bad guys told them, hey, we're about to hit some Americans at so-and-so. And they would rush out there and make a press event out of it. So if Al Jazeera rushed out the door, we knew that somebody was getting hit. Just saying. I feel like Al Jazeera, like some Vietnam veterans feel about Jane Fonda.
Yeah. So. I think they are they are twisting a lot of the Gaza war stuff for a narrative for sure.
Wow. Wow. Oh, he just responded back to me. He says, clearly you're not familiar with my work, but you're also not a journalist. I'll tweet back to him momentarily.
Oof, burn. I'm not a journalist.
I'm not a journalist.
I'm happy
right.
not to be one.
No, I'm just a veteran who watched Al Jazeera, you know, take advantage of U.S. soldiers in the war zone. Okay. All right. Listen, we got plenty of stuff on tap. I'm going to talk to this next section here. Democracy is messy. And yes, it is. You know, you look for all this stuff to finally be over tomorrow, right? Will it? I don't know. I mean, you know, we've had some messiness in recent years. I say recent years. Remember Bush Gore, year 2000? Bush Gore election, messy. It was pins and needles. It was a couple of weeks. It was one county that, you know, in South Florida that it got down to just literally hundreds of votes decided the entire nation's electoral college. So every vote does count. Messy. You've had legal challenges. You've had some states, some localities, some down ballot races where, you know, the legal challenges made the difference. Or you've had legal challenges where accusations were thrown and then they were proven to be false. You've had, you know, you had in the wake of everything that happened with the last 2020 election, you had the January 6th uprising. It was not an insurrection. I will not call it that. It was not an insurrection. Please don't try that with me. But the reality is this. You've got any number of things that are happening on the ballot that people are emotionally tied to. Democracy is messy. You know what's not messy? Not having a say. It's very clean. You get up and you go try to grudge out another day of existence under a tyrant or under a monarch who gives you no choices in your governance. Democracy is messy. It is freaking messy. It is always messy, and it always will be messy. Why? Because people are allowed to have differing opinions. You don't get a true democracy unless you have a differing of opinions and a acting out of those differing of opinions. You have candidates that oppose each other. And then you have supporters of those candidates who oppose each other. And then you have go to the polls and you get the results and you look to see what the opposing of each other really means in the end. And then the question becomes, what happens after? So I've got a number of stories here right now questioning whether or not there will be civil unrest in the wake of this week's elections. I'm curious what y'all think. The reality, though, is I believe that there will be pockets of, I believe, so let's go with it. Trump wins. Trump wins. I believe that parts of Portland will burn. I believe that there will be some problems in some sectors of places like Chicago. I believe that there will also be, though, I mean, watch it. Watch. We're seeing a shifting of what I would call the traditional Democrat vote centers. Not entirely, but some. I think there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. I think there'll be Democrats crying. I think there'll be wailing. There will be people needing triggers and trigger, you know, warnings and cry rooms. I think all that will happen. But I do believe there will be pockets of civil unrest. I think there will be Antifa and you know, that kind of thing, just having a complete meltdown. Here's what I'm most concerned about. There's a period of time between the election and the actual inauguration. Now, Trump will have, you know, Secret Service protection. He does now. He's also had two assassination attempts already. One of my real concerns is the possibility of harm being done to he or his family. That's a serious concern that I think we should all be praying about. So what's going to happen in the days to come? Well, there are progressives around the country right now holding online meetings and, you know, preparing for how we're going to push back. And like there was an article here that I've got from the Populist Times. Says there's a group of progressives across the country that are holding physical and online meetings, taking other initiatives. On a recent evening, says one, more than 200 people joined a Zoom meeting titled Mass Training for Women's Safety Teams, hosted by the Women's March Veterans because of escalating political violence. Okay, 200 people on a Zoom call is not what I would call civil unrest. I can live with that. But they're claiming that they plan to attend women's marches in Washington, D.C. Those are just weird. By the way, you know, wearing body parts on your head is just weird. There's going to be claims of the alt-right showing up. And keep your eyes open, by the way, for the bait and switch. You know, when the feds show up wearing khakis and carrying tiki torches, just understand, don't even get involved. Just watch from a distance, take a few pictures, post on your social media, and go back to the house. But do I believe there will be problems? In some places, I believe there will. Let us not be part of the problems. More on this when we get back. I want your opinions, too. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, I do mean it when I say it, Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, I'm finishing this finishing the day, actually. We're about in go-home mode right now. Just a reminder, tomorrow night, Right Side Media, which is the parent company of who we are. Right Side Radio is what you're listening to right now, but that is one of the presentations of Right Side Media. We have multiple podcasts up. We have written word that goes out. We do all kinds of stuff with social media. But Right Side Media, we just finished building out our brand spanking new podcast studio. And tomorrow night, we're doing a live stream from the studio, 7:30 to 9:30. We have scheduled call-ins from U.S. Senator Katie Britt from D.C., John Wall from the State Republican Party from Mar-a-Lago, and our own Attorney General calling in from Montgomery. So we're looking for a good night. So join us. You can go to rightsidemedia.org. That's our website, rightsidemedia.org, and watch the live stream from 7:30 to 9:30. It's going to be me, JP, Butters, and Birdman in the studio with some special guests on the phone. So check it out, and we'll be talking through the results and just, hopefully having a good night. All right, democracy's messy. I said that before the break. Yeah, let me just encourage all of you. Don't be a part of the problem. You don't have to respond to outbreaks of raucousness, and you don't have to create outbreaks of raucousness. We will win in some places. I hope we win in most places tomorrow. And there will be some Senate and House races where we look at it and go, wow, sucks. Do not be a part of the problem. And by the way, remember, they have spent the last 4 years vilifying anybody who voted for Trump as being a Jan Sixer. Remember that? They took what shouldn't have happened, by the way. January 6th should not have happened. There should not have been a canvassing upon the grounds of the Capitol and storming through the doors. There shouldn't have been. The vast majority of those people walked through the halls peacefully. And there are hundreds who've had their due process rights curtailed. They've had their due process rights and their rights to a fair and speedy adjudication of their issues just denied them, and they are in jail. Had their whole lives changed because of it. Do not be that guy or girl. Don't do it. That being said, you don't have to be quiet. Say what you want to on social media. Speak out to your friends. Tell them when you're at Sunday school and they're talking big about something and you don't agree. Talk about it by the water cooler, but do not get involved in the crap. That's what I'm saying. Don't do it. That being said, what are the most contentious U.S. presidential elections we've had? Well, in the year 1800, we apparently had a doozy. Thomas Jefferson, Aaron Burr. Thomas Jefferson and his chosen VP, Aaron Burr, they tied for first place. So John Adams, a member of the rival Federalist Party, only had 65 votes to their 73 and 73. I mean, it was about as tight as it can get. And there was a lot of raucousness, if you will. A lot of people mad. So 1800, they had one. The country was pretty young. 1824, the Federalist Party had dissolved. We were down to pretty much two parties. Andrew Jackson, Old Hickory, hero of the War of 1812. He won the popular vote, captured 99 electoral votes. Didn't have a lot of states back then. Keep that in mind. Secretary of State John Quincy Adams took 84 electoral votes. And as no candidate earned a majority of electoral votes, the election went to the House of Representatives, and they had to do some backroom negotiations. I mean, it got raucous. It got ugly. It got people mad. But they finally wound up with, I'm looking at it right now, reading this stuff and going, wow. Let's just say that there was near to a duel, if you know what I'm saying. 1860. Well, that was a rough time. Civil War upon us, tore the nation apart. Abraham Lincoln was a chosen nominee of the new, brand new Republican Party, the fledgling Republican Party. Steadfast opponent of slavery. It was a very divisive time. You know what happened in the years thereafter. 1876, the article I'm looking at right now from history.com says that one was a doozy. Democrat Governor Samuel Tilden of New York got 250,000 more ballots in the popular vote than his Republican opponent, Rutherford B. Hayes, but Hayes had 19 more electoral votes. So it was like massive. And there were claims of voter fraud. And there were claims of, you know, problems, and there was raucousness. 1912, Teddy Roosevelt jumped back into politics, ran on his Bull Moose Party, tried to be a third-party candidate. What he wound up being was the spoiler, and it caused the Republican vote to split between he and Taft, which ushered in Woodrow Wilson, a Democrat who, you know, led to all kinds of socialist policies. 1948, Harry S. Truman's on the way out. We're looking at all kinds of challengers. You had the whole thing with Thomas Dewey was a strong candidate, and you had them predicting Dewey who didn't win. But the most contentious ones we've had in modern history, I already mentioned the year 2000, Bush-Gore. 2016, of course, we had Trump beating Hillary and the wailing and gnashing of teeth by the Hillaryites. And then we had 2020, the George Floyd riots, COVID, all of it. It's massive. I'm praying that tomorrow we have a vote that is complete, a vote that is unquestionable, a vote that is full and in place within a short amount of time, and a vote that also ushers in a restoration for our country. And I believe that can only happen, in my opinion, by the red vote. I've got a call from someone from Huntsville we never had before. Name is it Revon? Is that right?
Revon
from Huntsville. How you doing?
Revon, man, how you doing?
I'm good. What's going on?
Well, I got two things for you. My first thing is, I don't know if you've seen, I just got off work, so you might have talked about it or not, but Nancy Pelosi coming out today talking about Trump's mental acuity.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that we all need to remember is Nancy Pelosi can spring chicken herself. Maybe her mental acuity needs to be checked.
I would say there's a lot of things about her that need to be checked. I don't think she's even real anymore. I think it's some kind of a mannequin standing in there.
Well, that's true. And, you know, my second thing, you got old Mark Cuban out there, and he's loud and boisterous. And the opposite side of him, you got Elon Musk. And now all of a sudden, we got Will Ferrell out there targeting us garbage men the way that he likes to do. So I'm gonna make a worldwide suggestion, and you being the media, I need you to put this in the news and let's make this thing happen.
What's that?
We got Mark Cuban and Will. Elon Musk and this old Southern 40 mid Batman in a celebrity WWE, WWF, MMA / fighting match. And let's settle it like they did in the 1960s with an actual duel.
You know what? I'm pretty sure that since I've watched how Democrats handle guns, I'm pretty sure we're on top with that.
Well, I felt safe whenever I thought about Democrats with guns, and then all of a sudden I saw Walls carrying a gun, and I thought, man, you hear about civil war, and if that's what I got to compete against, I like my chances.
Fair enough. All right, man. Good to hear from you. You have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, yeah. Revon calling in. I think he used to call in by a different name. So that's why I was confused.
Revon, man.
Hey, we got several text messages. And by the way, my thing with the guy on Al Jazeera stuff is blowing up right now on Twitter.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I answered back. He said, you're not a journalist. And I said, nah, just a soldier who saw Al Jazeera in Baghdad collaborating with insurgents against my fellow troops. Your employer is not a reliable news source. Therefore, I question your journalistic bona fides. And I'm getting a lot of hits on that. Just saying. Navy Phil from Athens says, Al Jazeera, journalist? No, propagandist. House is investigating China and Iran laundering money to support the Democrats, according to Breitbart. And of course, the FCC is smacking down NBC for allowing the Saturday Night Live skit to go through. JT Lacey Springs says, the Saturday Night Live skit was just a preempt if Kamala's elected. Ha-has and honey. Okay. Graham from Meridianville says Monday Night Football is ESPN, ABC, not NBC. Okay, was it?
He's talking about Sunday Night Football is NBC.
That was Sunday Night Football. Mm-hmm. Okay, did he get Sunday Night Football then,
yeah,
I guess?
Yeah,
okay.
That's what it was.
Did I say Monday? I said Monday earlier, didn't I?
I thought he said Sunday, but maybe you missed that Monday.
Well, either way, thanks, Graham. Marie from Madison says, speaking of violating the law, what about the pastor of the New Era Baptist Church? Yes. Holy cow. The New Era Baptist Church in Birmingham, who had the marquee warning black people against voting for Trump, said you may have already covered it. I have not. I wouldn't even call it that. That's not democracy is messy. I would just call that you can't cure stupid. All right. There's not a vaccine for stupid. It's just stupid. But yeah, if you haven't seen it, a pastor from New Era Baptist Church in Jefferson County, I believe, posted a sign out in front of his church that says black people should not vote for Trump or they'll be back to picking cotton. Most asinine thing I've ever seen done, and I hope that someone questions his faith sometime soon.
And then proceeded to put a slur on a church sign, which I think is inappropriate any circumstance.
It wasn't even like it was on a little yard sign. It was up on the marquee of the church. New Era Baptist Church, bam, don't vote for Trump if you're black because you'd be picking cotton. That's just unbelievable. Mike from Coxie says, hearing you guys talk about Joe Biden and Kamala not wanting his help, as I listened, it occurred to me you guys were describing a cacistocracy. Indeed, sir. Indeed we are. A cacistocracy, that government run by the least competent of its citizens. It's a perfect fit, Mike. This is like if they define cacistocracy in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, they ought to have a picture of Joe Biden right next to it. Colin from Decatur, it wouldn't surprise me, says, if it comes out that a lot of Mark Cuban's money is either tied up in a country like China, so he wouldn't want the increased tariffs, or tied up in hotels, which most major hotel chains thrive off illegal immigrants because they can pay them less. Well, there's a whole lot of speculation, but if you have something real, I'd like to see it, Colin. Thank you very much. All right, TL says we just lost our signal up there in Huntsville, so you might want to check with the producers up there. At the same time, JP, take me to a break. We'll take a break right now. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We are taking the break, coming back in the go-home time. Tomorrow is the voting day. Do you have your plan? Do you know where you're voting? Know it. Do it. We'll talk. Phil Williams, be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. I'm looking at a couple of text messages. Dustin from Hillsboro says, the Beastie Boys told us no sleep till Brooklyn. Well, I work till 5 a.m., so as for me, it's no sleep till I cast my vote for Trump. You go, man. Get her done, Dustin. Good luck on the night shift, and go vote, and then go home and crash, brother. Joe from Indiana. That's Joe, not Jeff. Joe from Indiana says, I think they powered down the state. I I don't think so. Anyway, I don't know. We're checking in with them, but JT from Lacey Springs says our Huntsville signal has no interruptions as far as he can tell. And then John from Huntsville has the grades in. Says JP and Phil gave an equally magnificent performance. They're both today's winners in A double plus. It means they both get to share the imaginary golden meatloaf trophy. Congratulations. Can't wait to vote straight Republican tomorrow. John from Huntsville. All right, John, you have a great night, man. Jeffro from Indiana is on the line. Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, today's mom's 96th birthday.
96?
So getting ready to see her in a little while.
Is she really?
96.
Wow.
Lives by herself, yep.
Wow.
Can't get her to move.
She can still sash you, too, can't she?
Oh, yeah, she's still, well, she's a good Democrat, though, so, you know, I don't know. She's got all her marbles.
Well, then she definitely sasses you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, what you thinking about your state for tomorrow? How's Indiana looking?
Well, Indiana and Alabama, we're going for Trump, so I'm not worried about him.
There you go.
But what we need to focus on is the down ballot races, because if Trump gets in there and doesn't have a good Congress, he's going to be powerless.
Yeah.
And while Democrats are stuck together like glue, Republicans are just like herding ducks. I mean, you know, everybody, you know, if you look at Liz Cheney and Adam Kissinger and stuff, you know, you know, they were Republicans, but boy, you sure couldn't count on them, you know. So
oh, yeah.
We need to get a super majority or as big a majority of Republicans in the Senate and the House as we can, so that Trump can do something and get some of this stuff that Kamala and Joe have basically destroyed over the last 3.5 years.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's always the same. The presidential race, the top of the ticket gets the most attention, but the down ballot races are really where we're going to sort of, you know, put the butter on the bread, if you know what I'm saying. It's absolutely true. We gotta have a House. Now, right now, it's looking good, and I think we're going to flip some Democrat seats, not just take some, you know, incumbents I think we're going to take away some incumbent seats. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I hope we take away some Democrat incumbent seats anyway.
Yeah, I like this guy up in is it Montana, Shahey, that's running against John Tester. So Shahey, the former Navy SEAL, looks like, you know, looks like he like a surfer boy, but he's in Montana. But he's pretty solid, and there's a few others that I think have a really good chance of taking their race.
We got to get the Senate, we got to get the House back, and then we got to grow a backbone to actually be able to govern with majorities, because last time, I mean, they couldn't get rid of Obamacare, but because of a few stragglers there like John McCain, but we need to grow a backbone if we're going to be in control, because the Democrats certainly don't have any problem doing things.
And I totally agree, and they've certainly done it over the last 4 years. In fact, I think if anything, we need to have an agenda in place that says here for the first 2 years, we're going to unwind all these things they've done over the last 4 years and do it as quickly as possible before they have a chance to get a midterm election that changes any of the power base. Anyway, tomorrow's the day, man. Do what?
Yeah. And the most important thing we can do to save this country, because it's going downhill, we have to have a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution.
Wouldn't that be
amazing?
That's
the only way we have to have it. I mean, otherwise it's all for naught, because politicians do what politicians do. It's like, I'm going to give you more than I'm taking in. So we need to stop that stuff, and that's the only way it's ever going to stop.
Well, brother, I appreciate you, and tomorrow's the day. And by the way, tune in and watch us live stream tomorrow night from the Right Side Studio.
I certainly will, bud.
All right,
have
man.
A good one.
Have a good night. Listen, as we're heading out, let me just encourage you guys. Tomorrow's going to be frustrating at times. Tomorrow you're probably going to go to bed and not know the results yet. You're going to wake up Wednesday and hope the results are in. And I would just say keep the faith. And I mean that with all sincerity. Do not become a part of the mess. Do not become a part of the raucous. There will be some places, I believe, that there will be, and I think it's the left, not the right, that's going to wind up being the problem. I don't think that the right is going to have a repeat. By the way, if you think about it, January 6th only occurred months after, right? Months after. But I think what you're going to wind up seeing is there will be outbreaks, pockets of civil unrest, potential violence, But you need to also be praying for the Trump family, because they have already tried to kill him twice. This cannot be allowed to happen. And we cannot see an election take place and then be allowed to then take out the candidate before he's even sworn in. Don't let it happen. So pray over it. Be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. And vote. Tell your friends to vote. Tell your friends in other states to vote. Pray for a miracle in the voting. Pray that truth is allowed to be seen. Pray that at every single turn, it is so unequivocal that it cannot be denied. That's what we're looking for right now. We're looking for all of that and more. Tomorrow's the day. We've been talking about it. God knows, we've been talking about it for 4 years. I came on this show 3.5 years ago. It's been a target-rich environment for a conservative talk show host to get started. But tomorrow's the day we get to walk through the door. And let's go ahead and pray right now that the results are in, that the results are clear, that the results are unequivocal, and that peace and restoration descends on our country. All right, listen, do not forget what I always say when we're closing out. There are more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. See you tomorrow.